Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Hey, Andy, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. How are you?
I am very good. We're coming off a big Penn State win last week in Los Angeles. They made the trip to the West Coast, managed to escape with a win. I'd like to start there with Andy, with our show today. This game was one of those, depends on your angle, again, that glass half full or half empty. And I wanted to get your take, how you look at it. Was this a game where you said, wow, great performance with that comeback after being down two touchdowns, Drew Aller, Tyler Warren, all great things. And we'll talk about the individuals in a minute. Or is this, boy, once again, they started slow. The defense had some issues.
Nope.
In other words, glass half empty. Which way are you looking at this game?
That's a good question, Jimmy. You have to see it as full, right? It's the kind of game Penn State doesn't usually win these games, right? Like in the James Franklin era. Think about it. That kind of game, right? Like, you know, down to the wire, all things being equal. That was USC's best shot. How in God's creation that team is three losses with that offense and that firepower? I mean, that's one of the 10 best offenses you'll see all football season in terms of talent. And they were playing at a pretty high level that day. Their execution was fantastic. But beyond that, that's the kind of game where you're like, you know, okay, Penn State did some things wrong, but at the end of the day, they just couldn't get over that finish line. They got over the finish line, Jimmy. That's, you know, okay, so the defense, I didn't think they played poorly. I didn't think they were playing really well. I thought the offense started slowly, but I didn't think they were playing poorly either in the first half. They just couldn't, like, get any momentum going. And I just thought it was a hell of a football game. I think it was USC's best shot as a desperate football team. It was Penn State trying to figure out if they're college football playoff ready, right? Like, can we win a game where we've got our you-know-what in the fire and it's so hot in our kitchen and it is up to us to decide if we're going to win this game? Not that we're the better, the more talented team, and they're not as deep and as fast and as athletic as we are. That was a much more level playing field than you would have thought going into that game. And it was all the way down, and they had to find something inside themselves to win it. Glass half full. Defense was fantastic the second half. We'll talk more about it, but I see it as half full, Jimmy, because at the end of the day, and if you listen to Penn State alumni, even some that played for James on podcasts and on social media this week, they're like, yeah, we don't win these games. You know, we don't, these are normally, you know, losses for us. This is different. So I think you have to look at it that way on many fronts. Look, you still got Ohio State in front of you. That's a loss. That's the expectation for that game. The expectation wasn't to lose this game, and they didn't.
I'm glad you put it that way, Andy, because I think USC is better than that 3-3 record. They, as someone pointed out to me, the game against Minnesota the prior week, they were ranked, I think, 11th or so, and they were one play away from winning that game, and this would have been a matchup of two top 10 teams, okay? I'm not saying USC is a top 10 team.
Correct.
But I think they're probably a top 20 team.
Yeah, that offense top 10 in my mind, Jimmy. That offense is, there's just, they've got talent. They're deep. I just don't know how in the God's creation. I mean, I watched the Michigan game, so I know how they lost. They kind of lost all three games in the same way. They got beat to the finish line, right? They couldn't finish.
Yes. And I think Lincoln Riley, he's getting, being given a hard time, obviously, this past week. But his explanation that how close they are to being 5-1 or 6-0 is legitimate. I mean, if you're a USC fan watching that game, you say we should have won. So anyway, let's move on. Let's look at some of the individual performances in this game and some of the individuals who stood out. You got to start with Tyler Warren. The stat I love most on this one was he was targeted, Andy, 20 times, and had 17 completions, okay? That's 85% if I'm doing my math correctly. And by the way, there was a ball that one might even argue he probably should have caught. But setting that aside, how in the world do you get open that many times? Just a spectacular performance by Tyler Warren.
When you're the focus of the offense and you have a coordinator with a little bit of mad scientist in him, and you're the focus of the offense, even though the defense knows it, he was one step ahead of them when it came to Tyler Warren and being able to figure out. I mean, he's elite now, right? Like, he's bordering on, you know, at Penn State, and they've had some first-round draft picks and some really good ones, and you can go all the way back to Kyle Brady and look at that, right? Like, okay, I know he was drafted by the Jets, and we know what the Jets do with their first-round picks sometimes. But having said all that, I mean, he tied some kind of FBS record with those 17 catches for a tight end. He is, Jimmy, the reigning Associated Press National Player of the Week. And he's performing like the best tight end in the country, right? So he played like six positions on offense, I think, in that game, maybe seven. Everyone's all gaga over the flea flicker and the touchdown pass where he started it by snapping it, right? Like, was this legal? Look how cool this design is. Who cares? What about the freaking catch? Come on. That was one of those, oh my God, are you kidding me, catches. Talk all you want about the play design. It was kind of neat. It's got some gimmicky, and it's cool. It's secondary by a mile to that freaking catch, Jimmy, on that rainbow ball. That was one of those that you won't see. So when it comes to Tyler Warren, he is what this offense is all about. He's got 40 catches this year. He's playing quarterback. He's running the ball, whatever. Think about this for a second, Jimmy. Their top four, Penn State's top four wideouts. You've got Wallace, Clifford, Evans, and Fleming, right? They combine. Those are your wide receivers. They have 48 catches. Tyler Warren has 40. What's that tell you? And in this game, he had freaking 17 of them on 20 targets. Ridiculous. And the quarterback kind of likes his tight end, I think.
I think he does too. And, you know, this is me nitpicking just a bit. There was the play where Tyler Warren down in the red zone, close to the end zone, inside the 10, catches a pass. It was tackled. I think Trey Wallace was open in the end zone. And I think it feels like each game there's a guy who's the target. Remember, was it West Virginia where it looked like Trey Wallace was the guy? Now there's been multiple games where it's been Tyler Warren. Not a bad primary target to have. And I'll still go back and wonder how he got so wide open, how USC didn't at some point in this game, especially like a halftime, say, hey, you know what? This 44 guy is pretty good. We got to keep an eye on him all the time. So anyway, just an exceptional performance, and he's getting national recognition, as you pointed out, Andy. Now, I'll also now – I took a little bit of a shot there at Drew Aller. But the fact is, Andy, he played a heck of a game. I think this was also a bit of a coming out party for him. He was not asked to carry the team previously. He was throwing about 20 passes per game. This game, he was asked to throw the ball over 40 times. Not only that, he was asked to march the team down the field with all the pressure in the world at the end of the game. And he did it, Andy. He's looking more and more like that five-star guy that we all wanted to see.
He's looking more like an NFL quarterback too, right, Jimmy? That's the flip side of it. That second half was what the way NFL draftable quarterbacks perform. But yeah, you're right about him being the five star. That was his drive, right? That was his drive at the there at the end of regulation to get the game into overtime. In the same vein for Trace McSorley against Iowa on the road, right? That was, as a Penn State fan, you're going to have a hard time forgetting it. You can't forget the Trace drive against Iowa. I think it's going to be very difficult for Penn State fans to say for a decade, 15 years, to forget about what Drew Aller did to force overtime. 12 plays, 75 yards. They were trailing 20-6 at halftime, Jimmy, right? That you have to turn to your quarterback. This offense isn't built to do what Drew Aller did. That's not how they function best. That's not how their bones are built as an offense. Is not for Drew Aller to throw it, 27, 29, 30 times in the game. They were down two scores, and USC was kind of holding the ball and still making a little bit of hay. It was clear at halftime, your quarterback's going to have to come out, and he's going to have to do something special. Here's what you really need to know about that second half and Drew Aller. This was Penn State's drives in the second half. Touchdown, touchdown, interception. They're going to happen. You're having to throw the ball. They're going to happen. Field goal, touchdown to tie it, and then that nonsense interception at the end. So if you look at it, that's five drives to get it to 30-30, and force overtime. Four scoring drives and an interception. So, he had to throw to win the game, to give Penn State any chance to win that game in the first half, and he delivered. There's nothing more you can say about it.
And, Andy, we can't finish up this conversation without mentioning Julian Fleming. Twice on fourth down, Andy, he finally had a signature moment with Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, I think one was third down and fourth down. He only had – those were his only two catches in the game.
They were both fourth down.
They were both fourth down? All right. And, Jimmy, those were only his 8th and 9th catches on the season, right? The receivers are not the priority in offense. In this offense, they are simply a byproduct of what is available to them. Penn State doesn't have to get these guys the ball to win the game, if you know what I mean. They're just a byproduct. And in a byproduct, you need to deliver in the big moments. That's why they got him. That is exactly why they got him.
All right, Andy, that is it for quarter number one. When we come back in quarter number two, I want to take a look at the bigger picture in the Big Ten. Bigger picture nationally. We'll do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number two of our show. Andy, in quarter number one, we took a look at kind of finished up Penn State versus USC, that 33-30 overtime win out on the West Coast. Before we completely get off of that, I did want to ask you, because this was such a topic leading into the game, and also we had Ohio State traveling to Oregon. The narrative was Big Ten, you travel two time zones, the record is 1-8. We had both Penn State and Ohio State going out west. Ohio State lost. Penn State beat USC. I think that's another feather in the cap for Penn State, part of this, traveling to the West Coast. But how big a deal is that travel issue?
Well, they were both kind of last gasp games, right? Like Ohio State lost on the last gasps. Penn State kind of won the game on the last gasp, right? Like, so they were very similar games. I mean, the numbers, those numbers tell me it's a big deal, right? Like, it matters. And in both directions, it's, you know, so I just think it goes back, you add that to part of the equation. It is a big deal. There's the answer to your question. And for me, in terms of Penn State, they don't win these games. Like, big deal games, right? Like, tough games, tight games. Games that are won and lost in the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter when the playing field's level, a.k.a. Michigan, Ohio State, maybe a bowl game here and there. They generally don't win these games. They won this game in the James Franklin era. Signature and win, Jimmy. Signature.
I think it was. And the end result is Penn State is now up to number 3 in the AP poll. Real nice. A lot of that, Andy, I think, is attrition, you know.
Absolutely.
I think it has changed the narrative in the national picture. It's now just win in advance. Just, you know, teams are winning ugly, but if you're winning, you're winning and you'll move up. And we've had teams like you typically expect, Georgia, Alabama, and Ohio State, Andy. Those are the three teams, right? When you start a season, all right, next year, the 2025 season, I'm going to come out. I have no idea who's coming back or who's around. Here's my preseason poll. Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, okay? All three of those teams, and see, I'll even go 3-4 years down the line. There's my top three teams. It seems pretty easy, but all three of those teams already have a loss, Andy.
They do. All three of them do. And Michigan kind of fell out of a conversation. They rose to the conversation pretty quick, and they've kind of fallen out of the conversation pretty quick. Texas, what is Texas? Right? Like, they killed Oklahoma in the Red River game last week. They murdered that team. They completely dominate them. Are they any good? Are they that good? They could be, but they haven't won anything. They don't have anything to show for it. They've got to win. I think for Texas to be relevant in that type of conversation, they've got to win the SEC to start. That's where that starts. They've got to win the SEC and find a way to get to the SEC title game and win the SEC title game. Otherwise, what's the conversation going to be? Exactly what you think, Jimmy. Well, you know, they lost games. They got a loss. They lost during the regular season. The SEC's deep, blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, who won it? If it's Alabama or Georgia? Same as it ever was.
You're right. It could still be that same end result.
Absolutely.
We're going to see very quickly this coming week. It's Georgia playing Texas, Andy.
Here you go.
And boy, can the narrative change depending on who wins that game. Georgia loses, there's a second loss, Andy. Texas loses, all of a sudden it's just like you said. Now, Georgia, Alabama, Texas. Everyone who you expected to be at the top of the Southeast Conference would have a loss.
Yeah, Texas loses. So I think pressure's on both teams in this game. Georgia doesn't want to be thinking it could possibly be on the outside looking in. Two losses puts you on the precipice, right? We're not saying it puts you out, but it puts you right on that sort of, you're bubbly. You're kind of hanging in the bubble land. Georgia's not used to hanging in the bubble land of anything, right? Texas loses this game. They throw the SEC into further chaos, and they continue to prove the point that it's still about Alabama, Georgia, right? That just becomes further solidified. So they have to perform and do it out of narrative. I think the desperation in the game in terms of with the 12-team college football playoff and the way we have no idea how it's going to shape out and what it's going to look like, but the way it's kind of moved as this season has progressed, Georgia's got the they've got the pressure to perform because they have to stay relevant. Texas wants to do it to prove something to themselves and to the rest of the country.
And also coming up this week, Andy, is Tennessee, Alabama. Is this a playoff elimination game?
It puts one team on the bubble, right? Like, you're on the bubble. It kind of matters what these games look like to a lesser degree, but with the way the SEC has shaken out this year, right? Like, it's It's deep and chaotic. It's your record over sort of how you won and lost games, because the pool of teams is now, the tail's really long, right? The tail of teams for the SEC and what it's going to look like for the college football playoff is probably longer than the college football playoff committee would actually like, right? It makes their job harder. And these two games are going to tell you, I mean, can you imagine Georgia and Alabama both being two lost teams as we head down to the final third of the season? That's what you could be staring at after Saturday. It's a little bit scary for the SEC in some ways. If they're in a very interesting spot, like you look at the other teams in the Big 12 and the ACC, and obviously the Big 10 as well, but you look at them and think, who's going to, you know, which one of those other two conferences is going to get beyond one or have a chance to get beyond one? And you look at BYU, Iowa State, you know, Pitt, you know, Miami, et cetera, et cetera. And then I look down at the SEC and I look at the teams and I watch football week to week and I think, boy, I wonder what 500 and losing 1-3 record in the SEC, Kentucky and South Carolina, what it would look like if any one of those teams I just talked about played them on any place on any given Saturday. What would that look like? So what it says is it's further solidified that the SEC's got a tail, but the tail's now providing a problem if their top-tier teams are losing, right? The Big Ten's still got to figure out, is there anybody beyond three? Is there anybody beyond Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State? Is there anybody else that wants to make themselves relevant? I'm not sure.
Well, we're going to get to the Big Ten right here, Andy. But first, you mentioned about the teams, the crossover, where you have middle of the pack SEC against one of the better teams in the Big 12 or the ACC. Well, we did have a matchup of top ACC and top tier of Southeast Conference. It was early. Clemson, Georgia.
Gobsmacked.
Georgia embarrassed them. That still, at the time, Andy, we said that has repercussions to the entire ACC conference.
Correct.
And guess what? We're halfway through the season. It sure looks like that could be the case. When you're, you know, it very well could be Clemson with one or two losses and they start getting compared to a Southeast Conference team. You know that's going to be head of the conversation. What did you do when you played Georgia? All right, Andy, you mentioned, you know, the Big Ten. Can it get beyond the Big Three, Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State? Can it? Could it be? We're actually, I think, Nebraska, Indiana this weekend.
Correct.
It's a big game, and literally this could be an elimination game for playoff contention.
Oh, I 100% think this is a game that says, are you going to be in contention to be fourth team out of the Big Ten possibly, or are you not? Both ways. Like, is Nebraska going to win the football game and give Indiana its first loss? And then both teams are 6-1 and 3-1 in the conference, right? Like that's a conversation. They still have other games ahead, but are you in it? Nebraska loses this football game, helps Indiana's cause, and you're like, is Indiana for real? I keep saying no, absolutely not. They can't possibly be. They beat Nebraska. That eliminates Nebraska pretty much, right? Like Nebraska's eliminated itself. Don't forget, Illinois is still 5-1, Jimmy. That's another thorn in the fly out there, I think, when it comes to the Big Ten.
And Illinois plays Michigan. Are we not going to find out about Illinois this week also?
I think you found out a little bit. I found out something about Illinois in the Penn State game. I thought Penn State played really well against Illinois when they beat them. And I don't think Illinois played a bad football game. It was exactly what Illinois wants. So what I will say about Illinois is they're not going to come out and beat you with flash and talent and speed and athleticism, but they're hard to beat, right? Like that's the mantra, I think, for Illinois. Team that is hard to beat. Michigan, in the same way, has played a better schedule. They're two kind of similar football teams. Which one's better in the fourth quarter at playing their game and figuring it out, right? Like – The game was right there for Illinois. It was right in their wheelhouse against Penn State going in the fourth quarter. Penn State just simply said, yeah, not on our watch. That's what it took for Penn State to win that football game. And that is a very important factor that helped them, I think, this past Saturday out in Los Angeles.
All right, I want you to make picks, Andy, on those two games. Michigan is at Illinois. Nebraska's at Indiana. Who do you have?
I'm taking Nebraska in the Nebraska-Indiana game. I think the quarterback play has come up. This is what Matt Rhule does, right? Like, this is right in his wheelhouse, right? I just – the way he builds and rebuilds college football programs, it feels like Nebraska's kind of close, but are they really? They're on the precipice. And he knows how to take a team across that line and sort of make them more relevant. Michigan, Illinois, it's the quarterback position. I'm going to pick Illinois. I think Illinois has the better quarterback play. That still matters, Jimmy. So give me the Illini against Michigan.
You know what, Andy? This is the first year that I think I'm really interested in those four teams playing each other, okay?
Right.
I am actually interested in these games and can't wait to see what happens. All right, that is it for quarter number two. When we get back, you know what time it is. It's quarter three. And your questions, we ask Andy. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. We all know what that means. It's time to ask Andy. This is where we take your questions for Andy. He gives us spectacular answers. Pressure's on, Andy. I'm putting it on you. We need spectacular. Good is not good enough. If you want to ask a question to Andy, very easy. Just download our app, Keystone Sports. That's all, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask Andy button, and away you go. All right, let's start it off, Andy, with Matt from Massachusetts. He says, Jim and Andy, remember the rumors a while back when James Franklin was thinking about the USC job? Think that might resurface now that they're in the Big Ten? P.S. I'm sending this question from Greater Good Brewing in Massachusetts and enjoying a Pulp Daddy. That's right. Pulp Daddy originated. It's a Penn Stater, but originated in Massachusetts. Way to go, Matt. I'm glad you're an advocate of the Pulp Daddy beer. So am I. So, Andy, USC, is Lincoln Riley in trouble? Or are we going to start hearing James Franklin to USC rumors again?
I don't know. I think Mr. Kraft restructured a contract around the last time James Franklin was rumored around USC. And, like, it's been more than a decade now. It just feels like, you know, James feels like the right horse for this course, right? Like, there's, you know, golfers play certain courses well, horses run certain horse tracks well. But Penn State and James Franklin, it just seems like the right fit. And college football's hard. Remember, Chip Kelly gave up his position as the head coach at UCLA because head coaching at college football has changed so much in the last 3 years that he wasn't coaching anymore, right? He's a CEO. It's more of a CEO job and the bus driver of the big fancy elite bus. Sometimes James is really good at that stuff, right? But so it's a job that suits him and fits him. And is the grass really greener on the other side? If USC isn't able, I mean, what is Lincoln Riley like 5-8 or something in his last 13 games? I think is after this loss or something like that. he's still a really good offensive football coach and a very good football coach and a good recruiter. It's not necessarily working there. I still think he needs more time. I really believe that. So no, I don't think you're going to start hearing James to USC. I really honestly don't think so this time. If USC decides not to have enough patience with Lincoln Riley. There, I said it.
Well, you know, Andy, I'm with you. I also think USC, there are signs with this year's team. They're close. They are so close.
They are.
It will be interesting to see if Lincoln Riley maintains control of this team. The rest of their conference schedule, the rest of their schedule is very doable with a game against Notre Dame to finish the season, okay? That would be a huge win. They can finish 9-3. And I think they're close. Now, another place where you're starting to hear the rumors, it's Florida, where Billy Napier seems like a dead man walking. Correct. Florida's schedule is such a killer schedule, and I don't think people will care about the killer schedule. But there's an interesting aspect of this that goes on now, Andy. When you change coaches now, can you wait for a coach to get through the playoffs? Okay.
Correct.
And the two names, who's the coach at Ole Miss, Andy?
What's that? The Lane Kiffin. You're talking about
Lane Kiffin. Thank you. Lane Kiffin and James Franklin. The name just escaped me. Lane Kiffin and James Franklin have been the two names brought up for the Florida job. Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, they've already lost two games.
Right.
So he's probably not going to make the playoffs. He will become available long before James Franklin will if Penn State makes the playoffs. It's going to be much harder for a playoff coach to change jobs because he's not – coaches will quit before a bowl game. They're not going to quit before a playoff game, Andy. All right. Kind of to tie in with Matt's question from Massachusetts, it's Ryan from Reynoldsville who says, this is probably somewhat rhetorical, but how much do you like it when James Franklin – took the Penn State flag Davian Collins tried to plant at USC's midfield. No coach is perfect, but James still instills a sense of class and dignity to the program that's so vital in college football. For those who are not aware of the story of what Ryan's talking about, at the end of the Penn State-USC game, a couple players, they took a Penn State flag. They wanted to plant it right on the USC logo at midfield. And James Franklin put an end to that very quickly. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, so you have to, when you're the CEO of a major college football program like this, you know, there is part of the job where is you are a leader and a teacher, and what you say, you set the tone and tenor by what you say, but what you do and how you do it matters more still, right? And that tells you, and this has been, you know, shown many times, James sort of, he respects his opponent and he respects the game more than anything else, right? Like, he's almost ad nauseum in his post-game interviews in a good win or even a big win. If you listen after, say, that's a really good football team, you know, ton of respect for their program, Coach Riley, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of paint by numbers. For a reason, because inherently I think James respects the opponent that you play and the game itself. And he wouldn't want somebody planting a USC flag on Penn State's turf. Why would he ever let one of his players, if he saw it happening and could impact it, do it on his turf? That's an action item. That tells you about James Franklin by an action, not what he says, what he does. Look at what they do sometimes. That matters too. And that wasn't he's a kid. I don't blame the kid. I don't fault the kid. It's like, oh, that kid should know better. Rah, rah. The kids. It's a, you know, they've got adrenaline rushing through them. They're gonna do stupid stuff. Remember, we were kids, Jimmy. How much stupid stuff did we do? Think about that out there, listeners.
Oh, never, Andy. Never.
Right.
Ever, never.
Right. Like, and James was an adult, the adult in the room who happened to see it, and he took an action. That should tell you something. I wasn't surprised seeing that, you know, he was around, saw it, and took action. Does that surprise anybody? No.
And you know, Andy, there are critics of James Franklin who'll say things like, oh, the only reason why he did it, protect his image, or he did it because, gee, you don't want it done to them, or, you know, give the other team bulletin board material for next time you play him. I don't care the reason why he did it. It was the right thing to do. I'm glad that the coach at Penn State acts that way, acts the way that James Franklin does. So, Ryan, very good point. Okay, let's go to Jimmy in Forest City, our good friend. He says, dear Andy, are you on the Tyler Warren Heisman watch bandwagon yet?
No, not yet. One game doesn't make a Heisman Trophy candidate, right? Like, he's been great all year, Jimmy, right? He's playing a variety of positions. He does a lot. Is he the best player in college football? Now, I know it's a quarterback award. I know that. And Jimmy, you know that too. It's sort of like the NFL MVP has become a quarterback award as well, right? Like, everyone talks about, you know, week to week, who's a leading candidate for the MVP in the NFL. I'm sorry, right now for me, it's Derrick Henry, and he's not a quarterback. I don't think he's one of the five. Is he one of the 10? I think he's put himself in the 10 conversation. I mean, 6 games, 40 catches, you know, 500 and some yards. But when you look at, is he the best player? He's the best player in his position, but is he the best player in the country? I don't see it. I think he's the best player in his position. I think he's Penn State's most valuable player on the football team, without a doubt. That is it. But Heisman, you know, I'm just not there yet, Jimmy. I don't see it. I'm more in the Boise State running back as a Heisman Trophy candidate than I would be Tyler Warren. And it's not a mile between the two, trust me.
Well, it's interesting, Andy, that, as you mentioned, Heisman Trophy is typically a quarterback trophy. But this year, you know, some of the names that are at the top of the list right now, at the vote we're taking today, the running back from Boise State, Travis Hunter from Colorado.
Correct. You know,
I think with Tyler Warren, especially at tight end, first of all, you're right. It's easy to get excited after one big game like that. If he has a couple more games, if he has a huge game against Ohio State and they beat Ohio State, then you can maybe talk about him maybe making the trip to New York. But we are so far away from that. It's fun, though, that you could actually have someone bring up that question. All right, let's go to Marty in Camp Hill. Marty says, dear all, I keep on hearing about the vaunted Penn State running attack on offense. But when I look at the stat sheet, I don't see it, especially the last two games. Could you explain the disparity?
So the lot, yeah, you're Marty, unfortunately, I'm sorry, you're wrong. Their runs per carry average is good. Last game, the running back position was compromised, right? They were missing one of them. They're a tandem. You can't talk. They're a duo, right? Like the two of them. If one of them's hurt, one of them has to play, then you look at it differently. That's what we had to do last week. USC, you know, why didn't they cover Tyler Warren? You asked earlier in the show, Jimmy, in the second half, and I got a short answer for you. They had kind of were bottling up the running game. They were 14 points ahead, and Tyler Warren was still doing what he did, and they weren't losing the football game. So you don't need to change anything. They were taking the running game away. It's when Penn State is most dangerous, they had already proven, when both Tyler Warren and the running game are yinging and yanging you. They decided to take one away completely and give a little bit more in the other, and in the end, it took Drew Aller to beat them. So I don't see it that way. I still see the running backs as performing pretty darn well, and USC was completely focused, as you will find Ohio State will probably do kind of the same thing.
All right, Andy, that is it for quarter number three. And Ask Andy, when we come back, We're going to talk about this Big Ten Southeast Conference Alliance or whatever you want to call it when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim, it's quarter four. And Andy, as has become our tradition, I cannot let quarter three go. It always ends up, I ask you a last question, you get to answer it, and I don't get a chance to respond. I just want to throw in my two cents on Marty from Camp Hill was asking about the running game, saying it hasn't been the vaunted running game that we had been talking about, and specifically the last two games. I think, Andy, what's interesting about it is I feel like Andy Kotelnicki is taking what the defense gives him.
Absolutely.
And we've even seen it, like, remember, was it West Virginia, the passing game was all about Trey Wallace. You know, where are the other guys? There have been a couple games where the game was about the tight end. It's been about Tyler Warren. There's been a couple games where, you know, they were getting like 35 carries between Nick Singleton and Catron Allen, and Drew Aller was only throwing the ball 18, 19 times.
Correct.
Well, guess what? Against USC, it's 43 pass attempts for Drew Aller. So I think it's part of this is a case of the Penn State offense and Andy Kotelnicki taking advantage of what they can against a specific defense. And one week it's going to be the running backs. Another week it's going to be Trey Wallace. Another week it's going to be Tyler Warren. And I think that's a sign of overall strength of the offense, Andy. And if USC was bottling up the running game, you know what? They've got a quarterback now who's capable of carrying the team. And we saw that at the end of the game against USC, Andy.
One little final point, Jimmy. That crazy play, that sort of flea flicker where, you know, Tyler Warren snapped it and ended up catching it. What allows Andy Kotelnicki to call that play is when they came out in the second half, and they shouldn't have. There was absolutely no reason for USC to change up what they were doing defensively. Kotelnicki sort of, you know, dipped his toe in the water of what we had been doing and had they made any changes or adjustments. They hadn't. So he's like, he knew exactly what defense they would be in, and he knew that he would get. He just kind of put some window dressing on what is pretty much a tight end streak, right? Like he put a lot of lipstick on what is basically a tight end streak pattern. And he knew it would be there, and he knew he would have one-on-one coverage because he knew exactly what the defense would do because they hadn't made any adjustments to what they had done in the first half, because at that point they didn't need to. They were winning the game, both sides of the ball, by what they were doing. Why the heck would you change anything? Penn State forced them to change the way they played defense, and look what Drew Aller did.
And by the way, Andy, for those who are asking about the legality of that play, a couple things quickly just to understand. If you look at it, the five offensive linemen were lined up like they normally would be.
Yep.
And Tyler Warren was lined up like a tight end at the end of that.
Yep.
That's all that happened. The only difference was he was the one who snapped the ball. That's the difference. And also, if you're the last man on the line of scrimmage, you're an eligible receiver because the two receivers on that side who were in front of Drew Aller, they were still behind the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
So really, it was not all that complicated, except you had Drew Aller snapping the ball instead of the guy who's the traditional center. That's all. So that's why the play was legal. All right, let's shift to our quarter four topic now that we're 4 minutes into the segment, Andy. And it's fascinating. In the last couple of weeks, we saw a couple of these folks who are coming out with the new their Super League plan, okay? And they're throwing out conference alignments and so on and so forth. Andy, they are so irrelevant. And the reason why is those people, they have no power. They have no say. And the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, who are the big boys in all this, have no incentive to do what somebody else says. It's all about what they say, Andy. Ignore the other stuff. Listen when the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference get together and start speaking, right?
Absolutely. We talked about this in the offseason, Jimmy. Like when we were talking about realignment and the 12-team college football playoff. And I said, you know, we had talked about it. I remember specifically saying they're down to a power two and they're rapidly heading towards a power four. They're the power two. Well, they're proving it now. What do they have? Top five and seven of the top 10, I think, in the current poll. AP poll, top 25 are from those two conferences.
But more importantly, Andy, they have the big television contracts.
My second point was going to be follow the money, right? Like, where's the money? Where is 60, 70% of the college football revenue? Where's that centered? Big Ten. If there's 100% pie, two of them have probably close to 70% of the revenue coming into them. That's the alpha dog. Follow the money. They should be talking to each other. They should be trying to figure out, which the SEC has done even back into the BCS era, take care of their own, right? The SEC has always taken care of the SEC in the 14 college football playoff era and even during the BCS. It was spawned on, how do we get the SEC into this at the next level and take care of our own? Now the SEC recognizes that the Big Ten is now a revenue giant. They're competitive at the same level, maybe not quite the same, but in and around the same level. Michigan helped that dramatically last year. And let's figure out, in a 12 team, three times more teams than we had a year ago, how we can get a competitive piece of the puzzle that equals the money piece of the puzzle we already have. That's what it feels like to me.
It truly is, Andy, because if you're the commissioner of the Southeast Conference or the Big Ten, your job is to take care of your conference, and that's what they do. Now, taking care of their conference means making more money for them, all right? So this is almost like a proxy meeting for Southeast Conference. It's about ESPN, and for the Big Ten, it's mostly Fox, a little bit of NBC and CBS also, but it's mostly about Fox. So when those two groups meet, the biggest thing I think that came out of this is perhaps having some kind of out-of-conference scheduling agreement between the two conferences. Think NCAA basketball and the Big Ten ACC Challenge, okay? Yes. Think that way. And why would they want to do that when it could be adding losses to their – Andy's making the money motion, and that is exactly it. And, Andy, think about this. The out-of-conference schedule, if you took one of the weeks and said, this is when we're going to play this Big Ten versus Southeast Conference challenge, you would own and dominate a weekend. And let me just throw this out for you, Andy. Take like the top team. Take Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, USC from the Big Ten, and take Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss, Georgia from the Southeast Conference, and take any permutation you want of those teams playing each other. What kind of TV ratings are you going to get for that?
you're going to get revenue ratings, right?
That's right.
That's what you're going to get. The interesting part of this to me, and it's obviously not a surprise because you could see it coming, was these two conferences in an already new and sort of changing environment, right? The first year of the 12-team college football playoff, they're not seeing this year. They're seeing 3 to 5 years down the line, right? In other words, they're already the two alpha dogs on the revenue front. They actually, both conferences and the leaders of their conference and the leadership teams of their conference, they see more. They see opportunity for even more revenue, more power. They see I don't think they're necessarily overtly trying to say, well, you know, screw you, excuse my French, to the other conferences and schools. They're saying, no, we see an opportunity for us to have even more power and make even more money. And that's what they're supposed to do. So they're trying to change college football's landscape with two power conferences. Remember, how long ago was it? Oh, like 2 years ago, it was Power Five. They're trying to rapidly move it to Power Two, while at the same time, without even having one season of a 12-team college football playoff, they're already trying to impact and influence the structure of the college football playoff system as a 12-team system. And we haven't even had one season of it yet. They see it.
And Andy, the tie between the playoffs and this playing the out-of-conference game is this. The risk in playing those out-of-conference games, obviously, is someone gets an extra loss. The way to mitigate that is to say we want guaranteed number of entries.
Correct.
So if you say I'm guaranteed 4 entries, both the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, okay, if we get an extra loss, not as big a deal. You're now almost treating those ACC and Big 12 schools like a group of 5 school. Yeah, we'll take one of you. But if we could guarantee, 3-4 from our own conference, we'll allow that. And by the way, looking at this as a fan, which I know is not what those folks are concerned about, if that gives us games like Penn State versus Alabama and Ohio State versus Georgia, I'll take it, Andy. Just like realignment led us to Penn State, USC, Oregon, Ohio State, and Georgia, Texas coming up this week. Those are the games we all want to see.
Oh, and is the regular season irrelevant? No. Here's the thing, that the last point I want to make. The risk-reward part of this proposition, part of these becoming bigger conferences and less, they've already done that. Now they're looking for only reward propositions. That's the only way they're going to do it. They're not going to take any risks with the teams. So either they get the guaranteed spots and they'll go this revenue route, they're not going to take a risk.
Very good point. They want win-win-win, Andy.
Reward, Jimmy.
And you know what? That's a pretty good business model, Andy. All right, that is it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.